question of being organized and who is behind the madness of 2,500 arrests on 46 college campuses, it's now confirmed that activists, leftist Marxist groups have been trained in these students months before the nationwide campus protests. Attorney Sidney Powell and Professor Pedro Blas Gonzalez discuss the bigger picture of the Death to America chants. And then the Supreme Court will weigh in on presidential immunity in Trump versus the United States. And now that FISA has been renewed again, can the FBI be trusted? You see, Mike Johnson has earned millions since becoming Speaker. Has that impacted his policy decisions? Paul Engel, Patricia Antone, and Booker Scott are here on the top stories and free speech being under fire with all this anti-Semitic talk. Where is the fine line? It's all next on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news, providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. It is Malcolm out loud here. Over 2,400 arrests on 46 college campuses nationwide from coast to coast since April 17. It's a lot of things you can call these things, many anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, but it's really anti-American. It's death to America would be the clue there, to be sure. We're seeing something that a lot of us have felt was building for some time. And you know, the funny thing is, like a lot of things we talk about, it's the tale of two Americas. It's all part of this American experiment. And in fact, depending what media channels you turn on, some of them are downplaying this as not a big deal. Others are playing it up as a very big deal. It just depends what you're watching, what you're putting into your mind, and what your thoughts are as to what's developing in our nation. A privilege to have you here. Welcome to the broadcast. Going to have a great program ahead here. A lot to cover. Going to start really right in this big, huge story here. And join us on the broadcast today. Just thrilled to have these two great voices up front here. Sidney Powell is here. She's an attorney, former federal prosecutor. She's a great author. She got great books. License to Lie is that big bestseller that is in the America Out Loud bookstore. And of course, it is available at any bookstore. DefendingTheRepublic.org is the movement. And Sidney's been on the front lines here fighting for liberty. Well, liberty and justice for all. And another great voice for liberty and justice, one of my favorites, Professor Pedro Blas Gonzalez is here. He's a professor of philosophy at Barry University in Miami Shores, Florida. His book, Philosophical Perspective on Cinema, is in the bookstore as well. Take a look at all of those. We've got great books in that store and with all of our experts and special guests and our experts on the platform. So, Professor, I'd like to start with you and get us started here in this conversation. We're seeing, some things a lot of people are aghast, haven't seen this kind of thing. I guess it's really, many would suggest, a war of propaganda, I guess, for many. But death to Israel, death to America. The NYPD found massive amounts of these signs and propaganda tools. Once they cleared out a lot of the encampments, they continue to find all of this material here, all printed up nicely on signs, tents, a lot of equipment here. I think the challenge is, if this is left unaddressed, these protests and uprisings, I think many would think, will have a chance to metastasize into something we will not be able to recognize any further in our country here. I guess, let me ask you as an educator, as a current professor yourself, what comes to your mind first and foremost? I mean, are you aghast by this kind of thing? Are you expected it? Was it normal behavior? What's your first insights to this as you've seen it happening?
No, the first insight is that it has metastasized. Is not in the future. It is now. This is part of the the Marxist understanding that the ends always justify the means. And so remember that famous line in Citizen Kane where he says, you supply the story and I'll supply the war. And here is the same thing. You continue to do this calisthenic, this intellectual calisthenics of what the left needs in order to stay vigilant. The leftism is it's about power, and you can't let it die. So we'll create crises that we will exploit. And so the crises are the physical, literal phenomena that you see here in the news, but the intellectual chameleon-like dialectic of Marxism is what is building this. So if you want to end it, you have to go to who are the people that are providing the funds, and then you're going to have to hit those, and then they will lead you to clearly the professors and the people that are corrosively making these human beings. These are human beings that are not happy at any level, and their outlet is violence. This is violence. This is about violence. These are rioters. This is not demonstration.
What you say there is important, going to the core or the instigators, Professor, and what's happening. Let me get to this here. A Wall Street Journal report just yesterday here on Saturday. It was activist groups trained students for months before the campus protests. Now, this is a big part of what I want to talk to you and Sydney about here. And I'm going to read you right from the journal now, and I'd like you both to opine on this. But all right, left-wing groups and veteran demonstrators provided guidance and support before the rise of the pro-Palestinian encampments. What seemed like a sudden outburst of hateful demonstrations across college campuses, it shocked Americans. But the political tactics underlying some of these demonstrations were the result of months and months and months, long time of training, planning, and encouragement by longtime activists and left-wing groups. The student organizers began consulting with groups, listen to this now, such as the National Students for Justice in Palestine, veterans of campus protest, and former Black Panthers, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Muslim Brotherhood. These are all groups that are doing this. And these groups have been around for decades, but this has been planning, to your point, Professor, it's been in the plans for some time. This didn't just come out of nowhere here. That's an important point. And what you're saying is we got to get to the core of these organizers and who's training all these people and indoctrinating, brainwashing these kids. That's the point, isn't it?
Yes, yes. These are all shell. These are all front groups, and you can call them whatever you like. They're shells. This is the fuel that feeds this sort of thing. And Marxism doesn't stop. It doesn't sleep. That's the title of an old book. It doesn't sleep, and we sleep because we are people who worry about our daily lives and our kids and baseball and this and that. These people do not sleep, and this is why they seem to be catching you by surprise all the time. But there is just no surprise. This is the standard operating model of Marxism.
Sydney, this group here, the National Students for Justice in Palestine, the NSJP, they've been around for decades here, but they've got more than, listen to this, I bet you about every listener doesn't even know this, unless they've studied this. They have more than 300 chapters across the United States, which all organize these college encampments and building the occupations, et cetera. And for months, they've been calling on students to stand strong against the colleges. And what they're asking them to do is divest themselves of investments against Israel. This is a fight of really Islam and, Judaism, Christianity, any part of that you want to speak about. And so that's the core of this argument. And these groups here that are funded all of this, and Soros is involved in this and all of this. What do you see with this?
Well, it's just another example of professionally funded chaos on our college campuses and across our country that is just as the professor was talking about. It's an organized, well-funded plan of the left to cause more chaos and dissent and dissension in places that would otherwise be happy and peaceful were it not for these people. And we've been importing them by the thousands for a decade and seeding them in different parts of the country. We've literally imported people who do not share our values, who want to destroy America, who will chant death to America. And I think we need to send them back.
Will we though? I mean, right. Well, let's stay on that point right now. Send them back
Not
when
with this
you.
administration, we won't.
Well, that's the bigger point. And have you seen the story in the last many days where he is looking to bring a lot of these refugees and the Palestinian people over into the United States? Have you seen that?
Yes, I have seen that. I was mortified, and it wouldn't surprise me if they do that. And they do it in the dark of night, and they send them wherever they want to send them, and it just breeds and sows more chaos.
I mean, it's probably already happening. Back to your point of in the dead of night, this is actually what's been happening with the migrants and the immigration at the southern border. There's countless. They are flying them in from all over the world and flying them into cities, and they won't even tell the governors what they're doing. It literally at night, they won't report the airports or any of that. I wonder if this has already started and happening, coming in from the Middle East, because that is an initiative of this administration. But yet, here's the thing, Sydney. None of those countries around them, none of them, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Lebanon, none of these countries, there's not one single iota of a nation there who will take these Palestinian people in because they see them as a problem and they see them one in one connected to Hamas. This is Hamas. They don't want them, but yet our president is looking to bring them in here. This is going to be a red line, no?
And Hamas is a terrorist group. So why in the world are we importing terrorists into the United States? It's
Yeah, but you
insane.
see
It's
the key.
insane. It ought to be criminal.
You see the key there, Mark Malcolm, with the other Islamic countries is that they see that as a Israel-Hamas fight. But not here in America, because America has said we are going to have a confluence of reds, of greens, of communists. Even the hedge fund guys are all into this. And this is why it's a left problem here in the United States and in the West, and not just an Israel problem. And that is the key that you hit upon right there. This is a divide and conquer. And so now the pre-Obama world is very different. The left was just, Cold War left, right? But here you have the enter the international Hamas business, and now we don't call it that, but that happens post-Obama. This is the key moment here. Post-Obama is the confluence of all of these leftist groups, and it doesn't matter. I mean, they use each other. They use each other, but they are it's a left versus the West problem, and not an Israel problem in America and in the Western societies.
I have to say to you, and Sydney, to Professor's point there, when he said the way he phrased that, a pre-Obama world, it gave me chills. I got chills running down my spine because we've had a lot of conversation here from people that are in the know about his influence throughout since 2008, back to your point, Professor, all the way forward to current day and the Biden administration. How much of a problem do you think that is?
I think he's exactly right.
Elaborate more, Sydney, on that.
Well, Obama came into power to transform America, and that's exactly what he's done. And with Biden, he's never left power. Trump was a brief interruption, thank God, but Obama has never left power. He works with George Soros and all the people that want to destroy this country, and he's still doing it.
Wow.
Yes, Obama said that he was going to, quote him, dismantle this country piece by piece. And so they couldn't do that with gender. They couldn't do that with, sex. They couldn't do that with class warfare because that stuff doesn't work here. He had to find some way to destroy the place from the inside out, create an angry populace, these so-called younger people. And by the way, over 60-something percent of these people are not even students. These are professional agitators. They are the international right here, internationalist globalists, being funded by Soros and Klaus Schwab and all of those guys, and Obama and all these people, and the State Department.
To your point, Professor, it's not just the professional agitators, but do you see there's a good amount of faculty that are involved in this as well? For example, at Northeastern University in Boston, professors, they formed sort of a human barrier around these encampments, stopping the offices from dismantling them. At University of Texas at Austin, members there of the group, faculty and staff for Justice in Palestine, called for the resignation of their president, Jay Hartzell, because he requested police assistance and restore an order there because it had been out of whack here. And at Columbia University, that faculty, they staged walkouts and the faculty got upset and sided with the students. So, Professor, that's what's happened here. It's not just, as you say, the students, but they feel like the faculty is with them and they sort of live in an alternative universe. In fact, to that point, when elicited, and I've seen this on camera, when questioned about October 7th, when questioned about the egregious nature of what happened that day, many of these students said it was proven to be false. They look like deer in headlights. And they say, no, that was proven to be false. That never happened. So for a generation that is so connected, supposedly, how can these people be so brainwashed?
They are brainwashed. They're probably Holocaust deniers, too. I mean, they're insane. They're just fixated on their view of whatever it is without any regard to reality.
Yeah, in the professors, quite frankly, as you put it, there are the hardcore left, no doubt about it. This is what they live for. But there are also a bunch of cowards, too, in there, and they're protecting their tenure, and we know who they are. And they're protecting their tenure, and they're living off the fat of the land at any cost. And they know who they are. And this is the other half of that, that is, you know, looking at evil and looking the other way.
So how do we get through to those students? Back to the way both you were just describing the students themselves and your descriptive of it. You know, are they lost? Are they just gone? Are they just part of a bad deal? I mean, do we write them off? Is there a way to recorrect that? Any ideas, Professor, on how to address that with this generation, that group of people that are so brainwashed into, I mean, what do you do?
Well, the key is that this is a tiny minority, quite frankly, and they are, you got to write them off. They're finished. These are everything from mental illness to hardcore leftists. These are psychopaths. You got everything in there. But then the regular students you have to work on, and that's the one group that you can win. And you're not going to win it unless you clean up these universities that are being dismantled from the inside out. But you can't do that either because the government from the top to the bottom, especially post-Obama, is providing that fuel.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Sydney. We federal funds into the shouldn't that be stopped? Shouldn't that be looked at, the funding for taxpayers to these universities and what have you? That's a big deal too, isn't it?
Yes, and if the trustees will back the presidents of the universities, they could clean this up. I mean, any professor who participates in this kind of crap should be stripped of their tenure immediately and fired. And if they're out there participating in it, they ought to be arrested with the students who are violating the rules and the laws. I mean, I've seen untold millions, if not billions of dollars of damages to different universities in some of the pictures of the press on these riots. Mm-hmm. And that's not acceptable in for any reason.
Brown University, Northwestern, Rutgers, all of these have created sort of agreements with the students trying to stave off the bigger problem to get through graduation and all of that. Some people say they're real, but the students are demanding divesting from any part of Israel, and there's a whole bunch of demands they have. There's a whole list of them. In fact, there's a story from our educator on AmericaOutloud.news right now under the hot button issues. About that problem there, about this under top stories. Brown University buckles under the demands of protest and terrorists from Dean Bowen here on our network.
That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. That should never happen. You can't negotiate with terrorists. You can't reason with irrational people. And students should not be running universities. It's like letting the inmates run the asylum.
And to Sydney's point, the board of directors of these places are all very rich men and women. Okay, they're very rich men and women that run everything from hospitals to hedge funds. If they had the courage to say, we are not going to allow these criminals to destroy this free market society, which is what they're doing, they would clean it up. They would clean it up and the university head people would dance. You follow me? But yeah. To her point, they have to do their job and get rid of all this. At some point, we have to recognize that this society is being led by, you know, no adults in the room, but it's worse than that. It's a whole bunch of psychopaths.
Interesting word. Sydney, professors use that word now two or three times, psychopaths. You agree with that?
Yes, I do, unfortunately.
I had to ask him because you don't hear that word a lot, but it's kind of interesting how it fits the bill here, doesn't it? You know?
Yes, there are some very sick people out there who want to destroy everything good about this country, and we need to weed them out and either put them in jail or send them to a country that shares their beliefs.
Well, to your point now, hold on. Did you see, I'm sure you must have seen multiple reports on this in the last couple of days, that the Republic of Iran, Tehran now, has offered any of the students a free scholarship and a free pass to go and board and room and probably a box of Cheetos with it as well if they want to come to Iran. What do you think of that?
Well, great. Send them there.
Well,
to probably raise funds on GoFundMe to fly them over there and parachute them out.
But remember, they're going to send them right back even more radical.
Well, that gets me to an interesting point I really want to talk to you both about. And it gets to this anti-Semitism bill. But before I get there, let's just take a couple of minutes. The American experiment, okay? The American experiment. I want to draw your attention to Harvard University in Boston here, where, again, this should give chills to everybody listening to this conversation, but they raised several of the Hamas-Palestinian terror flags up on those campuses. And, I mean, they were flying there in our country. And then you might have seen, or maybe you didn't see, some of the videos after that where some of the people that are not psychopaths, as the word we're using here. It's an interesting word to use, friends. I kind of like it, actually. You don't hear that out there a lot. But these psychopaths, again, kind of puts it in perspective, doesn't it? And so they, the people that are not psychopaths, got the USA flag, put the stars and stripes and put it back up there. And beautiful moment, and the hands on the hearts and singing the national anthem. And, oh, my God, you got better chills that recorrected the statement of this. It was quite a moment here in our nation. I don't see a lot of conversation about it, but there's a point to this American experiment, and I want to talk to both of you about where, you know, let me flip the script a moment and say, in a lot of ways, and this is showcasing what's right with America, the fact that you can do this, the fact that you can burn the flag, the fact that you can do that and fly that, the fact that you can do any of this has got to be still a good thing. Sydney, answer to that point. Do you agree with that statement?
I agree with that, except for the violence. The violence has to be stopped. And I think all the universities are explaining that, you know, freedom of speech and the right to peaceful protest is very important. But the violence needs to stop, and everyone who engages in it, including the professors, need to be arrested and prosecuted for it. But there's good news on multiple college campuses. At the University of North Carolina, there was some guys from a fraternity protected the American flag and got it back up.
Chapel Hill.
And the same thing in I think it was Ole Miss, this student started singing the national anthem in a counter protest. Mm. People are sick of this crap. They are just sick and tired and fed up with it. And it's good that students on these university campuses are standing up against it.
As patriots, we understand the importance of this, but this fight is a little bigger than this. And Cindy, what you're talking about there, as long as the violence, and that is the point here. But again, and I think you would understand this better than anybody, the corrupt Justice Department, the corrupt DOJ, things that you wrote about years ago before many of us even knew Sydney, back to that point. But look at the corrupt DAs, all of this, that's all over our country. No bail, letting everybody out. All the kids are grinning and smiling for the camera as they're being arrested, knowing full well they're going to be turned back out onto the streets. Cindy, this is something we would have never seen when we were kids growing up. We would have never seen that's sort of where we got the like a pass to go pass, collect $200 and pass go. But that's what the kids know, and they're using it to the psychopaths again are using it to the best of their ability, are they not?
Yes, they are. And we can thank George Soros for a lot of that too, his funding of district attorneys who are promote lawlessness themselves is simply outrageous. And they're all over. All the big cities almost have Soros-funded district attorneys, and that's why you're seeing the crime rising so much. and the
But
defund the police movement. All of it's coordinated. All of it's
right.
coordinated by the radical
What's a
left
breakdown of
and the
society?
psychopath.
It's a breakdown of
Yes.
society, is what it, a lawful society. Professor, you talk about that all the time in society, and the breakdown of all of this is something you're passionate about as well, that you see out there. And we're seeing it right now. I mean, like in ways we've never seen it before. I guess it's a wake-up call for the majority of us. You and both of you have already suggested this is a very minority. Of course, that squeaky wheel, they always get the noise gets the excitement. What do the rest of us take from this?
Well, you have to realize that Americans and people in Western societies just want to let life be. They want to be just living, right? They just want to live and they just want to proceed with life. But this is exactly where my psychopath point comes in. In the Marxist theory, the critical thinking today, or not critical thinking, critical theory, you cannot let life be. You have to create problems. You have to create incidents. All right. And this is exactly how you have to get that beehive going. And this is where the psychopaths are attracted to this. People who find life to be a burden. Because today we're finding that a lot of these people today, not just the students, are having a problem with free will. They don't want to have to make choices. So this is where these people have taken advantage of a nice society, an open society that allows for that. And that's going to have to end. This is why after COVID, you have seen what you could describe as a coerced exhaustion. People are tired. They don't give a you know what. And this is the left saying, yes, beat them down because we don't want to let life be. And this is where you get the whole leftist phenomena that everything must be politicized,
Right.
everything from children to sex to the cars you drive.
This critical theory, does this have a, what's the, just, I know what you're going to say here, maybe, but I want listeners to hear. What is the danger of this critical theory and everything you just perfectly set out there? What is the danger of this becoming the norm in society anymore, in this American experiment tipping over?
Yeah, well, the critical theory goes back in briefly just to the fact that we're not going to talk about class warfare. That's the classical Marxism. We're not. We're going to talk about the culture war. So to do that, we have to infest every aspect, everything from surfing at the beach to sex with your wife, to everything has to be infested with the critical theory. And critical means there's a Marxist term, and it's not critical. If anything, it's the opposite. It's criticism to end all criticism. Therefore, there could be no voices that rise against critical theory because of the technique of critical theory itself. It's kind of a dog that once it bites its tail, it finds out it hurts, so you don't do it.
That's a perfect visual. You can sort of see where that falls. Professor, I'd like you to just each of you take 30 seconds and tell me, Professor, with all of these uprisings, you remember back in 2020, the Summer of Love and everything that had happened there. Oh my golly, what a tool, talking about the tool for the Marxist left. We're in an election year. We've talked about a lot of the dangers here now coming through this summer. How does this end right now? What is your crystal ball saying takes place now in the next few months between now and November with all of this? Does it settle down? Does it rise up? Does it, what happens?
No, you end up with a October surprise, without a doubt, that is going to rock this nation, no doubt about it, this year. You have to remember this is going to intensify because the left thinks that it finally has this society by the throat. And people are not reacting because people are nice and thinking that this is all part of free speech. It is not. It's speech to end all free speech.
Wow. Is it hard to follow that up? What would you say?
It is hard to follow that up. I think it's imperative that we keep our guard up in every respect and work to protect our freedoms on every level, including from these professional agitators and criminals who would shut everything down.
There's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of work to do.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's and I you do get really an understanding what could potentially happen, which we've talked about. We talked about it 6, 8, 10 months ago, friends. What could happen between now and November 24. And remember again, I remind you for the countless times, 2025, a new president or some president takes office again for the next 4 years. And in 2026, what happens, my friends? You tell me. What is it? It's a moment for this nation. It's our semi-quincentennial, 250 years in the year of our Lord 2026. And if any of you remember back in 1976 and that moment, the historic moment of 200 years in the bicentennial, this is a moment. that is going to be recognized for this nation. What we look like, how we look, what we look like, if we move forward, if that American experiment succeeds or fails, is what lays in the balance here. A tremendous thank you to attorney Sidney Powell, Professor Pedro Blas Gonzalez, a tremendous voice, as I could talk hours and hours to both of these. I have great respect for both. Defendingtherepublic.org is Sidney's site. Please check that out. The book, License to Lie, Professor's book, Philosophical Perspective on Cinema. The thing about this conversation, it's big thinkers, big thinking, getting outside of the box, out of the mainstream media box, and all the lies and distrust out there. The next part of the broadcast, let me just tell you right now what we're going to have here. We're going to be talking about presidential immunity. We're going to be talking about that Pfizer renewal. We're going to be talking about, interesting story, Mike Johnson hauling in millions and millions, big, big bucks since becoming speaker. Like, wow, money, kind of money. What about a national popular vote? What do you think about that? And a lot more on this anti-Semitic business. We've got a magnificent roundtable coming up in just moments, friends. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.news. Do help us share the out loud truth, liberty and justice for all. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The Wellness Company shares your values and fights for medical freedom. They put patients before profits and follow medical science, not political science like doctors on the left. Their chief medical board, which includes Dr. Peter McCullough, are the makers of the incredible American-made high-quality spike formula. If you worry about spike proteins, go to twc.health and use promo code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount. Once again, that's twc.health, promo code OUTLOUD.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud.
Joining you back here on the Weekend News Magazine, my fellow Americans, welcome into the broadcast. Privileged to be with you always, and I love doing this broadcast. It's a lot of work, it's a heavy lift, I always say, but it's wonderful to have all of these great voices in play here. Please join us back at AmericaOutloud.news and help us share the out loud truth. We're going to do a roundtable discussion here. Keep it just very comfortable amongst friends here, as always. But three stellar voices, have great respect for all of these folks here coming on right now. Author, speaker, constitutional scholar, I always call him. He's just a wonderful man. Paul Engel is here. Paul has spent a good part of his life now, a couple of decades, teaching both the Bible and the U.S. Constitution. I love saying that because it's a fact. He is the host of the Constitution Study. 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, just a brilliant mind. Patricia Antone, speaking of brilliant minds, by the way, Patricia Antone is here. She's an author, activist, and as I always say proudly, she puts all of these conversations in the intersection of our Constitution. In other words, analyzes to our Constitution. We need more people doing that, friends, in our nation. For sure here. But she's a weekly columnist and just a great activist and a terrific person of voice to have on these broadcasts for sure. And then, drum roll here now, Booker Scott has been with me for many, you know, we're on a roll here, Booker. And so he is the host of Truth Be Told with Booker Scott, 6 p.m. Weekdays, Monday through Friday. He's the founder and president of SaveYourRepublic.org. It's a site he created back in 2022 at the midterm elections. And very interesting, election integrity. This gets to the core of that. And I think he's ramping it up here coming into 2024 now that we're dealing with all this. He's worked for iHeartRadio, Cumulus Media, many different groups here. So we're in for a treat, friends. I want to start with presidential immunity, Paul Engel. And I've seen parts of this with several hours. The oral arguments with the Supreme Court was on April 25th. So it just happened here. And there's a lot of back and forth. Now, this is Trump versus the United States. There were some justices who took it up a few notches, which irritated people because they really want this to be about Trump. They don't want it to be about the presidency. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, he says, I'm not focused on the here and now. Well, of course, they want him to be focused on the here and now. Justice Gorsuch says, we are writing a rule for the ages. Tell us about this, the pros and cons of this presidential immunity, please.
Well, and those who are outraged have justification to do so. The purpose of the court is not to write law. It's to decide cases based on the law. So this whole idea of they're writing something for the future means they're violating their oath of office.
Now, interesting.
All of this started with the multiple lawfare, the multiple charges against Donald Trump, some of them civil, some of them criminal. And in the, I think it was a New York case, one of their attorneys came up with this idea that a president cannot be charged criminally for any acts that they committed while the official acts they committed while in office. Well, there's one really serious problem with that. There is no such thing as presidential immunity in the Constitution. It does not exist. You're right, it was 2 hours and 40 minutes of oral arguments. I suffered through each and every one of them. And Mr. Sauer, the attorney for Mr. Trump, he tried to make four arguments about why there is such a thing as presidential immunity, except I went through each and every one of them and found them to be false.
Paul, let me ask you this. Hold on now. When you say, I'm not going to dispute what you say there, that it's not in the Constitution. I get that. I get that. But what about historical context and the fact that does that matter at all? I guess I'm asking you that for almost 250 years, we don't normally take a past president or a current president and crucify him on the cross.
That's true. That doesn't mean that they didn't deserve it. And it doesn't mean that they had this thing. What we used to have was a sense of decorum. We used to have the two main parties would play nice with each other. They hated each other's guts, but they tried to deal honorably. That's gone. But you want to talk about history? How many of you realize that President Grant was arrested in Washington, D.C. for speeding?
Yeah.
He was taken into custody, taken to prison, had to pay a $20 bail bond, and then never showed up to court.
Wow. No, nobody would know that. We weren't here at the time. Yeah. Patricia, what do you think about this immunity thing with Paul's argument on the Constitution versus historical context with the fact that this is a get Trump scenario 24/7?
There truly is. And there's an awful lot in the precedent that has been set since the Constitution was ratified that isn't actually in the Constitution, right? The sky is blue. That's not the Constitution. But that said, I think what we have to do is when they refer to they are making a ruling that will impact the future, they're being mindful of the fact that if we don't protect the president from malicious claims about the things that he did in his official capacity, if we fail to do that, then we're going to have a big fat mess and we're going to have a presidency that is basically dysfunctional. And the other thing I would say about that is that the line of questioning shows that they are making a discernment. Grant's arrest, driving over the speed limit, was a personal act, not connected with his official duties, right. And his arrest was his getting a ticket was appropriate. So the line of questioning shows that they are making distinctions between his official acts as a president and private behavior.
All right, that's good. That's good.
The problem you end up with that is you effectively make the president a king. And whatever he does officially in office cannot be questioned, cannot be challenged. And that's not what was established by the framers of the Constitution.
I totally disagree with that. It's not that it can't be challenged. It means that you don't use the criminal system. You don't use the criminal justice system in order to challenge it. There are appropriate venues for that. But what we have to remember is that if we have a political office, one that is elected by the people, then the means for challenging that person must go through the same channel in as much as possible. And I think that's what the court is trying to do.
All right. Booker, I need you to play cleanup on aisle three, please. What do you say?
I'm not sure that I want to clean up this right now because both of these people are really smart, Tricia and Paul. I have always made the assumption that something the president does in office in an official act could not be prosecutable anyway. And I think when you listen to the questions of the justices, they went to that a whole lot because you don't want to, for the drone attacks that Obama did, you don't want to come back and prosecute him. You don't want to go back and prosecute George Bush for weapons of mass destruction. But yet at the same time, anything that a president would do in a personal nature, then they absolutely should be prosecuted. And I'm not sure what Paul thinks about that and what he thinks the solution would be or the answer, but I'd love to hear.
Well, that's perfectly said. Paul, real quick, summarize that so we can move on.
You punish the malicious prosecution, not the person, not establish the person being prosecuted as immune, because that actually exacerbates the problem, in my view. You're right, there's a lot of malicious prosecution, but all you're really doing is, in my mind, rewarding that malicious prosecution and turning the president into a king rather than dealing with the actual problem.
Paul, let me get to the FISA renewal here, please. So this is passed now. This is a thing. It wasn't 5 years extended. It was 2 years because they were hoping, or the thought was, the Republicans, the House thought that, well, Trump, because he was the most egregiously hit from this thing, would take a better look at this thing and write something up for the future. But it surely passed through bipartisan on this thing. You had a piece that really got my attention here. FISA in the hands of the FBI is the national security threat of our time. Briefly, tell us about this. Why give the power back to the people who, come in and blew the bank up and give them the keys to the house of the bank, I guess, again, huh?
Exactly. I mean, the 702 section was, I would say, unconstitutional from the beginning, at least questionable. But certainly the ability to search that database without a warrant, without having to provide probable cause, is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And it's been around for 5 years. And rather than saying, we need to fix this, the solutions they created, A, all happen after the fact. Mm-hmm. So once your rights have been violated, then maybe possibly sort of somebody might be held accountable if you really believe that, since we've had so many examples of that in recent history. But the thing that got me is, according to the law, if you are an FBI agent and you wish to search the FISA 702 database for something, information related to any U.S. person, all you need is the approval from a supervisor. That's all you need.
Right, which is the problem again, right? I mean, their hands are so far in the cookie jar, you can't get them out, Paul.
That's not the fox guarding the hen house. That's the fox being the hen house.
Oh, well, that's exactly it. All right, I don't want to spend seconds on this here. Booker, you have anything to add to that contextual, Patricia, or not? Because I think the FISA thing is a suicide mission.
The 702 has actually done good things. Okay. And I like to be protected. I like to be safe. And just in the last year, it's helped stop a foreign government from kidnapping and an assassination plot. It's helped identify China trying to hack a transportation hub here in America. It's discovered Iranian hackers that conducted extensive research on a former head.
But Booker, let me push back. But why isn't it stopping the domestic criminals? What's the problem there?
Well, it's not supposed to be for domestic. And Paul touched on this. You can have all the laws you want to, but unless the people in charge of enforcing them are willing to abide by them, what does it matter? Sure. Yeah. You know, you can change the law, but if they're not going to follow it, it doesn't matter. And they haven't followed the law in the case of the 702 either.
That is the big problem right there. Right. Let me move on. I want to start right with you, Booker, and talk about this blistering report that you had on here, which is really eye opening. A lot of Republicans and surely conservatives have lost trust on Speaker Mike Johnson, mostly because the narrative has changed dramatically from when he was just a representative to when his name was in the hat for speaker to this very moment of time where he seems to have embraced a lot of the things he was against. And it kind of starting to smell like a rotten egg, if you will, Booker. But you had a piece, Mike Johnson hauls in millions since becoming speaker. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it appears that now his accounts total about $25 million. And since he has become speaker, it looks like he has totally brought in about $23 million. Now, the speaker's job is to bring in money. That's probably his most important job for the party. I understand that. Compare it to the last filing he had last quarter before he was speaker, he raised $600,000. So when he starts bringing forth legislation and then passing it and supporting it, and we have to look at it a different way because of the money. And the money is involved. It's way out of control. I was just doing some research on it. And in 2014, the political advertising was just over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. In a decade later, this year, we're going to be north of $10 billion.
Wow.
And these people are looking for a return on their investment. No one spends $10 billion without getting something for it. What are they getting for it?
Well, did you look at that when you asked the question, who donated, what organizations? Any idea of that?
Yeah, we did some of that. And what Mel Witte, who is a political scientist, yeah, who I had on the show, we've done Letitia James, we did Adam Kinzinger, and now we've done Speaker Mike Johnson. She was tying it back to AIPAC and the Jewish people is where a lot of this money comes from. And then she was tying it specifically to the fact that a lot of this money in the $95 billion was to Israel.
Yeah. One quick point I want to clear up for my own benefit, Booker, and that is the $600,000 he did before he became speaker. Okay. And then you talked about not the bigger number, but another number of over $8 million in donations since becoming the House Speaker at the point when you wrote this. My question is, was that for the Republican Party as speaker, or was that for his personal deal here?
That's the difference. That is for him. Okay. And that's the comparison to $600,000 to $8 million. Now, there is a joint PAC. There are two or three different PACs that go along, and totally he has access to about $25
million. Okay, that's still a big deal then. That's a smoke. Okay, thanks for clearing that up. I wanted to make sure because you had a higher number on the whole big, but that was with the party itself. And that's legit. You're right with raising money. But this other still is a bit of a question, isn't it?
When you go from $600,000 to $8 million, right, in a matter of 6 months,
right,
and then you're doing what you're doing with the legislation, right, you have to look at it with some scrutiny.
Yeah,
you have
to
ask the questions.
Yeah. Well, we live in an environment where money runs the roost here, and it controls all this stuff, which is why they always say the mandate, the final line on all this is follow the money, follow the money, follow the money. And you do have to question with Speaker. Let me ask you, Patricia. What kind of a job is Speaker Mike Johnson doing? Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you thrilled? Are you what?
Well, I think that he is compromised. But that said, I think this whole structure is designed to compromise character. I mean, I don't think you could conceive of a structure that does a better job of undermining a person's character and their loyalties than the system that we presently have in place.
Which is what Booker was referring to, who we elect in office has consequences, to be sure.
Not only who, but what? What are we doing when we make the speaker the person who is also in charge of raising money? And that is a primary responsibility of the person who is also in charge of what legislation is going to be brought through. Yeah. I mean, that is a prescription for corruption.
Yeah. Okay. Paul Engel, this is fascinating. Let's get to this next story. Listen. This national popular vote, and there's an extraordinary piece up on Sunday on AmericaOutloud.news to go look at that Paul has done. It's got a video attached and a big story on this. Maine is the latest. Tell us what this is. This is the popular vote versus our college, the Electoral College. What's the movement? How many states are involved? Maine is the latest. What the hell are they doing? What's going on here?
Well, there's an organization called the National Popular Vote Compact that is encouraging states to appoint electors not based on the state's election, but on this mythical national popular vote. I say mythical because there is no such thing, nor has there ever been in the United States, a national popular vote. As long as the people have been voting, which we didn't at the very beginning, we voted to tell our state what electors we wanted, and it was the states that choose the president, not the people. This idea has become such a mythos that this group created this idea to call the National Popular Vote Compact. By the way, it is actually a violation of the Constitution for a state to join this compact. This compact was never approved by Congress as required by Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3.
Why are they all joining if it's against that? What are they doing? What's going on?
Well, it's lawyers, and the lawyers never actually read the Constitution, so they don't study it. They don't know what it actually says. But there's something else here. See, we are a republic of republics. We're designed as a union of states. Mm-hmm. What the national popular vote idea is literally to turn us into a democratic monolithic entity, which I want to remind you, it was Vladimir Lenin that said democracy is essential to socialism. This is about taking the states out of the process. This is about turning us into a monolithic country where the biggest, baddest, and loudest rules over absolutely everybody, and all the distinction gets squashed.
This is really the core of where we're having a lot of problems. Patricia, I know this is something you speak about and passionate about yourself, and with states' rights and the fact that Paul, which I just love, he just points out so often, and we just need to continue to point out to listeners that the states created the federal government. The federal government should be the state's bitch, not the other way around.
That's precisely, but we've lost that.
Tell us what's going on.
Well, and the concentration of power attendant to replacing our federal government with a central government, what that does is concentrates power. And every time power concentrates, obviously we give an advantage to tyranny. So that is why our founders wanted to protect against that. And so that, like Paul says, you know, the Republic of Republics, a federation of sovereign entities is what they created in our Constitution. And in that, then there are no national elections. There are state elections. And that protects us. And people need to understand why that protects us from the concentration of power that otherwise enables tyranny.
This is the drum roll now I want to get to with this group here. And let me say this here. All right. Wall Street Journal had a piece here. Patricia, I'm going to you next here. While the U.S. debates free speech, pro-Hamas rhetoric in France is a crime. Protests roiling U.S. Universities have ignited a fierce debate over where to set the limit between acceptable criticism of Israel and speech that encourages this anti-Semitism and violence. In France, government authorities are stepping in to draw the line. Courts have ruled that public speech condoning the October 7th attack or legitimizing Hamas as a resistance movement amounts to condoning terrorism, which is a crime, Patricia, under French law, punishable by up to 7 years in prison. And French prosecutors are investigating politicians on the far left, union officials, and hundreds of other people for allegedly condoning terrorism and inciting anti-Semitism since October. I know there are a few people in America who would love to do that as well, but that's beside the point. Patricia, let me layer that on to a piece you did. If free speech is to be protected, anti-Semitic speech must also be protected. Tell us what you mean.
I mean that our gut level reaction to what's happening with these pro-Hamas uprisings, they're not really uprisings, actually, it's a deployment. But what's happening here is producing a visceral response. And what we want to do is we want to condemn the speech And I think if we don't discern very clearly and with huge line here between action and speech, we stand to fall right into a trap. And that is, they want to erode free speech. Free speech is extremely dangerous to the cause of the global Marxist movement. And so they want to erode it. And so they will go ahead and step into the position of, okay, let's go ahead and get these uprisings going. Let's undermine civil and social order. And then let's have them stomp on their own free speech. And that's what we stand to do. That's what's happening in other countries, Western democracies, and we better not do it.
They are using, again, the American mantra, the American experiment to its fullest, is what I would say back, Paul Engel. They're using it to its fullest. And I'm guessing you and probably Booker as well would agree with the fact that anti-Semitic speech, and in fact, the House just did a bill on that, which a lot of people think is just smoke and mirrors, talking about the speaker. What do you think about that bill? And to the point, real quick, Paul.
Well, the thing about free speech, Trish, I completely agree. I'm old enough to remember when we used to say, I vehemently disagree with what you had to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Mm-hmm. I love when these people speak because it allows me to point and laugh. And I think that's the reaction we should be having is don't shut them up. Let's just let them see how stupid they are, point, and laugh.
Oh, I like that.
And let people see how vicious and malicious they are.
I love it.
Exactly.
So the idea of shutting down speech. Now, that said, though, if we'd stop worrying about what people are saying and start focusing on what they're doing, then we're going to have a more rational reaction to things like vandalism and assault of Jewish students and such like that. Let's get clear about what is wrong and what is not wrong.
Yeah.
And go after what's wrong.
That is a great march in orders right there. I love that. We're going to end on a note here, Booker, from yourself here. This is interesting what we're talking about right now. And I really took something from the conversation where Patricia and Paul are saying, listen, let's just let them be fools. Let them be idiots. Let them look like they look. And don't silence and don't use this against it. But that's an interesting way to look at this. What do you say?
Well, I heard Paul's show the other day and he mentioned this and it really made me think. And I agree with both of them. We can breathe life into things and make it much bigger than what it actually is. And I wonder if that is what we're doing here in some ways. Allow them to do, I mean, it's not that many kids, you know, it's on the campuses. What is it? 200, 300, you have 60, 70,000 kids enrolled. It's a small percentage.
Well, it's more than 200 or 300. They've arrested well over a couple of thousand, 2,500 or so, to be sure.
Yeah. Across the country.
Right. And, that's correct. Yeah.
And of course, with in each campus, over half of them at Columbia weren't even students.
That's right.
You know, those are outside provocateurs.
Well, the faculty, too, is involved. The professors are encouraging them. They're involved in this, by the way, in a lot of cases.
Sure. Yeah.
We talked about that as well.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I agree with both of them. If you don't breathe life into it, then it's going to go away. We can make it into a big thing. And like they say, we can cancel our own free speech, which doesn't make much sense.
Right.
Or we can allow them to destroy themselves.
There is something to be said there. Thank you. Thank you, Booker. But there is something to be said about what Booker puts out there as well. You notice when they're in the camera and they get the highlights and you see their grins and they're getting the attention they want, which is the point, I think, that is being brought up here, friends. It gives us something to think about. But at the same time, I listen a little bit of what Patricia and Paul says there. And it is kind of fun, though, to pin the tail on the jackass at that point, isn't it? You know, it's an interesting way to look at it. We can have a little fun with this here. Again, visit us back at AmericaOutloud.shop. We've got all the things in there to keep you healthy, happy, and prosperous, looking good, feeling good. And as James would say, I feel good. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na. And I think that I could. I did that a few weeks back because somebody said, don't give up your day job. Why do people say that? I never said I was a singer. Just happy on the moment here. Friends, thank you for joining us on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud. America.